Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
What's up, peoples? Welcome to Comic Book Nation's The Pull List, where we talk all things comics all the time. I'm your host, Matt Aguilar, and joining me today, just look at us, back to the original duo here, Kofi Outlaw. What's up, buddy?
What up?
Just me and you. Oh, there we go. You're welcome.
We're regular Joker Harley out here.
Joker's bleeding and everything. So we got lots of comics to talk about. We're just going to be breaking down a ton and trying to hit all the big points. And one of the biggest ones this week is the anticipated Action Comics 1064. This is the beginning, the true beginning. All the seeds have been planted. If you've been catching up or if you've been keeping up with Action Comics and Superman and those individual titles, as well as the annual, all of those seeds have been planted for House of Brainiac, but it officially begins here. And man, this leads out with a bang. We get this, you know, huge, I mean, obviously we're going to keep the bigger spoilers away from here because, you know, people are just reading it. But I feel like it's okay to say, especially since previews are out there and everything, that the Zarnian army that Brainiac has kind of been hoarding up in space finally makes their big debut in Metropolis. And there's a lot of action in here. If you were worried that there wouldn't be any action in this book for some reason, those fears can be put
to
rest.
There
is a ton and, you know, exciting stuff, moving pieces around the board as well. There's some big things, some big characters that actually don't show up in this issue in particular. But for those keeping up, Superman 13 is one that you will definitely want to check out as well. And that is where you will get some answers on that front. But just dealing with Action 1064, you know, what did you think about kind of this launch? Especially there's a last page that will have people talking, but what did you think about this launch of House of Brainiac? We've been talking about how well Action and Superman in particular have kind of layered all these stories and subplots and always kind of building the next thing while the other thing really starts to hit its stride. And now we're getting some of those long running ramifications. And we'll get to one in particular that I am going to spoil here because it is awesome. But you know, what did you think, Kofi, about how this is all played out?
I think it's kind of sad, actually, like just to see what happens when poor Lois Lane just tries to take a day off. As you see, she's getting her yoga pants on. She's got her mat. She's just trying to chill for a day. Girl can't even get across Metropolis without having to say hi to every Tom, Dick and Harry. And like, you know, just when she's finally getting her zen on and getting her ohms in, like, you know, it's on. Brainiacs and Zarnians start dropping for the sky. In all seriousness, we've been talking. If you guys are not kind of keeping up with Comic Book Nation, first of all, what's wrong with you? Subscribe. And on the comic side, we've been really talking about how DC has entered this new era where they are shoring up their top trinity of Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman with like story arcs across books and this kind of general continuity that is really exciting to see them building and kind of building out these heroes that are in modern, but this kind of classic throwback comic kind of way at the same time, and really making us look at them with new eyes. And I'm loving how the Superman series and Action Comics are kind of dovetailing together. It's like when Spider-Man was nailing it across four books back in the 90s, right? Like you, and I remember the weeks you got like Web of Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man, and then Spectacular Spider-Man each week. And they all four had different flavors and were like giving you kind of different Spider-Man, and it was hyped. And so like Superman's really entered that era right now where like, yeah, Action Comics keeps me up with like the larger Superman family and like what that all is about, while the Superman comics more focused storyline about him and like Lex and all that. But we've built out in such a short time, we have kind of rebuilt Superman's entire world and mythos, not adding anything too crazy new, some Lex Luthor revenge squad, some, you know, new uses of kryptonite, but otherwise a lot of familiar elements, a lot of familiar characters. And even this book, it's a lot of familiar things. We've known Brainiacs before. We've seen, well, we had Lobo, but now we got this larger Zarnian thing happening, but we've seen this. And, you know, when they land in Metropolis, that's like exciting. That's a Superman, super family level threat. Like,
right.
I don't know that the Justice League needs to show up here, because except for like Wonder Woman and the others, some of them might be getting real hurt out here, but like the super family's there and taking care of it. And it's an exciting battle that feels like it has stakes. And there's one kind of action moment with Lex Luthor in here. That's a scene that is just the artwork and the staging of both of these books in different ways. Superman, the animated series, or Superman is more like the animated series. And cartoony and still action packed, but this is like what I would love to see in like a Superman movie. You know what I mean? Like the way it's drawn and the scale of it. Like there's a scene with Lex Luthor facing a glass screen of enemies, and it's like Nick Fury and Winter Soldier, right? He's like,
yeah, that was cool.
Like right through the, and then like that whole thing is cool. And there's like a whole thing with a countdown of his armor and like how he's like operating, and like so
that
much
cool
character work that has been done to earn that. When we get into these battles, how things flow, how people talk and how they operate, from the super twins to Lex to Superman himself to Lois, like it's all cooking, man. It feels like a world, and it's kind of classic Superman excitement, and it's still Superman without having to get all, you know, drippy nostalgic and stuff. It still feels like modern and edgy and exciting, and it's exciting DC stuff. And best of all, it's easy to follow. Like we'd get this general premise: attack is happening, survive attack, and at the end we get a tease of a bigger thing happening. So yeah, I'm digging it, man.
Yeah, I gotta say, like, it's you know, you mentioned the artwork, Rafa Sandoval is just, and also Alejandro Sanchez, the colorist, those two deliver some just stunning splash pages in here. There's one of Superman flying that is just stunning and like captures so much of the spirit of the character that they've kind of really honed in on these two books. And then also, I mean, all the Lois stuff early on and the sequences of just like even how a day off plays out for her. And then you get something like the Zarnian attack, and that's epic, and all the layers of the battle that happens after that. Again, that last page is also another one that will hit all the nostalgia places for fans. It's really impressive. I gotta say, like, the artwork on the Superman books in general has been fantastic. Even when, like, over in the Superman book, even when Jamal Campbell couldn't like do the interiors and stuff to go with the covers, they've still found artists that really kind of fit in generally with the style and bring something else, but it keeps the tone, and it's fantastic. And action's the same way. And Joshua Williamson, you know, is writing this as well, bringing it kind of closer to orbit with Superman. So there is it feels, you know, familiar and it's tethered. It feels like all part of the same universe and stuff. So I think it's a good onboarding as well, even if you haven't, if you skipped out on some of that stuff. But I wholly recommend that you go back and read all that, because that's fantastic. The other thing I will say is that we got the chance to talk to Joshua about the book. And one of the things is there's a reveal probably like first quarter of the issue. And it's like it's a turn. And I won't say who it is, just in case someone wants to, you know, preserve that. But there's a turn here that happens. And it was something that actually kind of caught me off guard in a great way, because I just kind of there was so much other stuff going on. I just totally didn't even think about that. And he actually teased that in the very first issue. And in fact, there's an Easter egg on the first cover that puts it right out there. It's on the first cover, and you can actually see it. And he left that there the entire time. That was in issue one of Superman. And now it plays out here. And like, that's the kind of stuff we're talking about. And it's awesome that kind of level of, you know, just fun things and layering is there. So yeah, I thought this was really fun. I've had the chance to read Superman 13, and I think people will really enjoy that as well. So I am, I'm hyped. I'm good for this. So let's move into another book that we actually were pretty high on as well, at least in its debut, X-Men 97. Its second issue hit. This is, of course, the, you know, kind of filling in the gaps between when the original series ended and the new X-Men 97 series on Disney Plus launches. And, you know, we got to see Dazzler last time and see all these. We saw the moment where, Jean revealed that she was pregnant to Scott. So we're seeing all these things build up here. But this is the return of Mr. Sinister. As a longtime Sinister fan, that always makes me happy. And I got to give a special shout out to the artists, Salvador Espin and Matt Millo. My word, he looks like he stepped out of the cartoon. Mr. Sinister, yeah. and oh my God, it's nuts. Like, we actually have a couple books to talk about this week that are just like,
yeah, we're gonna get into this
notes. Yes, it's so good. So why don't you cue it up, because that's a perfect segue. So like, what did you think?
Yeah,
about
let's
it?
Get into this. The real theme of today's show: Matt's cartoony comic goodness. Like, drop. Matt made us read several cartoony comics this week. One is really, really is hitting, and we'll get to that. And I think we should focus some time on that one, which is Uncanny Valley. That was hitting, you know, one was okay. We'll get to that after this. And one was in the middle, pretty good, and that was X-Men. Yeah, I'm enjoying what this X-Men 97 comic series is doing, because it's actually enhancing the experience of watching the show while offering exactly kind of even more of what the show offers in terms of like X-Men nostalgia, like 90s X-Men nostalgia, character cameos, all that kind of goofiness. I mean, we get Sienna Blaze as a major antagonist. Who the hell has been thinking about Sienna Blaze? I remember in the 1990s thinking like, oh, Sienna Blaze is the game changer. This is like the anti-Magneto. Like, it's going to be she's going to be doing big things for a long time. I can tell. And like, who's been thinking of Sienna Blaze? But like, here she is back in, and we get to see like Prism and Riptide and like all these classic Marauders characters, right? But, and they're not even like fully formed as the Marauders yet. It's like the Sinister Squad or whatever Seven. They are. Sinister Seven, yeah. Yeah, and
it's like, know, a fast food bad guy team. Hey, we need a name.
Yeah. Just like somebody wanted to one up Spider-Man. Hazard, yeah. Like, and so this is like goofy Marvel fun, but it actually goes hand in hand with the TV show because they also sneak in a lot of relevance. Mm-hmm. Like, we learn in this one by the end, you know, not to spoil, but we learn how a particular character kind of came back and like really got into the fold in with the team and stuff like that. And there's a big kind of cliffhanger about that. And I think that's going to be good. And we get to see kind of certain key things. I'm getting so mixed up between the show and the comic right now, because it is,
I think, to its credit, right? Because it's so seamless. It's actually really impressive that, like, you know, obviously from the show, we know that Jean was swapped at some point, yeah, right? And you can see those building blocks here of like, we're going to get that moment. We're going to see when that happens. Like, I've been impressed at how seamless they've really worked this in.
Yeah, they're both relevant to each other and they're both enjoyable to each other, and to kind of keep it as an expansive multimedia project. It's actually one of the better examples I've seen of these superhero franchises going multimedia, because like I said, like, these are not necessary stories, but if you're liking the show, these enhance like the show pretty directly. Like, you see this moment in this second issue of when Wolverine found out, you know, that Jean was pregnant, and how he reacted to that at first, and that whole interesting thing, right? And so you get that scene, and that's key to the show, and it enhances seeing how Logan later reacts to things, how he reacts to when Jean goes into labor and all of that. Like, so it's enhancing the show, and you get like fun, like I said. Where else are you going to get Sienna Blaze? Who's animating Sienna Blaze for that production budget? Nobody. But on the comic book, we get to see Sienna Blaze, and she's actually pretty cool. She does some cool, crazy stuff here, and you're like, oh, yeah, Sienna Blaze. You know, I would never go in and like pick a book like this up off the shelves myself, but because you are holding an invisible gun to my head and forcing me, like, I'm actually really ending up enjoying this like in a crazy way. So yeah, if you're loving X-Men 97, this is a great thing, and this is a great accompaniment to the kids, because the show does, as we saw this week, get into some more serious stuff sometimes. So like, this is kind of keeping it more lighthearted and stuff like that for like the kids, but it's good.
Well, it's lighthearted,
classic X-Men.
Yeah, I was gonna say, right now is like, if you're a, it does feel like a new, to use a word that wrestling, that will be picked up in wrestling a lot, a renaissance, if you will. It's a renaissance era for the X-Men, as it is in wrestling. Shout out to Cody Rhodes. Finishes the story. I'm very happy. All right, so let's move into another lighthearted book. And Kobe's not wrong. I actually didn't realize it when I put the list together. But yeah, there's a theme. There's very much a theme. Hercules, number one. Hercules. So Dynamite has had a series of Disney spinoff series, and I've actually really enjoyed a lot of them. They kind of range. They're all over the place as far as genre and tone. You know, you have something like Lilo and Stitch, which is just like super fun right out of the, just kind of has all the warm feels and stuff. And then you have something like Hades and Scar, which, you know, are kind of trying to find interesting areas to explore in those villains. And so Hercules very much, it takes place after the movie. So in essence, you know, it's kind of like getting that, you know, true, you know, Hercules sequel. I know there's always like a ton of different, I think there's like four Cinderellas that I didn't know about until Ember started watching them on Disney Plus outside of the original. But you know, Hercules, this is just picking up from there, and it's a lot of this has to do with the art style, and they have I apologize if I'm butchering a name. I probably am. It's not like I didn't try to do it right. So George, I hope I'm saying right, Combates? I hope I said that correctly. Kudos on the amazing artwork. This is just like steps out of the animated series. It's fun. It captures that whimsical Disney style. And it just goes a long way. Like, from a story perspective, we really kind of start messing with like Aphrodite and Hercules kind of trying to still, you know, prove himself to his father, Zeus, in a lot of ways of like that this was the right choice and stuff. But really, like, the fun of this is the dynamic between Meg and Hercules, and just kind of a quest of the week style thing that turns into something else. It's super fun. It's super light. No one's going to bang their head on the wall trying to like figure this out and what's happening and what's going on. But I really enjoyed it for that. And I just, it was cool. Okay. So what did you think of this? I know this was probably the one you weren't super stoked about.
I can't even tell you the reason behind how much I hate this Disney movie. It's partly just because I don't
now
like
it's
Hercules.
Clear.
I like Greek gods and I like this, but Hercules is always the weakest ass story of those. And, like, I've never liked Hercules stories, and something really demented happened to me when I went to see this movie in theaters. I went with a friend of mine who was dating a girl at the time, and, you know, they were using this movie opportunity for very different reasons. And, yeah, it was bad. And so, like, yeah, this is, like, my least of the favorite Disney franchises. So when I saw you put in Hercules, because Matt does this thing where he'll throw me books, but he never tells me which publisher it is or where to find them. Like, he just kind of throws the names out. And so then I have to...
Wait. I put my name by it. I didn't even make you read this one.
Yeah, but we got to do a whole show, and I'm reading most of this just to double check what the hell you're doing, because I don't want you running 2-3. And so, like, I went in, and I was, like, digging through, and I was like, okay, Hercules. I was like, is this going to be some, like, Dark Horse thing? Is this going to be, like, some crazy Conan? And then I got to this, and I was like, oh, my God. And I was like, of course. And so I popped this open. Yeah, I couldn't do it, Matt. I flipped through the whole thing. I tried. I was like, I cannot stand even one character in the Hercules movie enough.
Oh my God, Kobe.
I hate her. I cannot stand Hercules. I do not. It's one of the worst Disney movies. It's absolutely terrible.
Wow.
It stars James Woods. Let's just leave it at that. Okay.
Okay. Whoa. We can't do that. Okay. There have been lots of castings that ruin great characters. So can't do that. That's, but also, man, like Hercules is, that's okay. So number one, I won't even blame the book, because that wasn't even the book's fault. That you just don't
movie. This is all me. No, this is all me. I'm taking in all everybody in the comments. Y'all can have your Hercules love. I'll go watch Tarzan. I'll rock out to some Phil Collins.
Oh, Tarzan's great.
Yeah, like, there's a good Disney movie. If I got to see about a strapping white guy hopping around in Disney movies, there you go. I'm going Tarzan.
I can't hate on that. Plus a Phil Collins soundtrack,
yeah, exactly.
Man.
Exactly, yeah. Hercules. Who's out here stumping for Hercules? What is wrong with y'all, man?
I like Hercules. All right, so what I really need is a great Mouse Detective series from Dynamite, because that's where my thing. Oliver and Company and Great Mouse Detective. Let's make that happen. All right, so
yeah,
let's
I'm not arguing on any of that. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, it's great, right? Let's move into the other book that Kobe mentioned, because I do want to talk about that, because number one, I'm a big fan of Tony Fleeks from, we actually talked about his new book 2 weeks ago, I think it was a week or 2 weeks ago, and in Feral. And that, of course, is from the same creative team from Stray Dogs. So I will give anything at this point, you know, from him or, you know, Trish or the creative team a chance. But Uncanny Valley got me from the cover. I didn't even have to get that far. All I wanted was the cover, because the cover, if you haven't seen it, is like this mix of Saturday morning cartoon, real life blend. And I was just like, I'm in. And the book starts out with, you know, you getting to meet the young man kind of in the middle. And it's a relationship between him and his mom and, you know, kind of struggling in that new school area. And then it's pretty, you know, like there's good stuff there. Right. But then we started to get into the more kind of the bigger fantastical concepts of what is, these animated world and characters coming. They're actually all real. and some of that stuff and the blending of it and what is real, what's not, what the heck's going on. We still don't have like a ton of answers in that regard. But as soon as the, and I won't spoil who he is, but as soon as the dude that's on the cover at the very bottom, the like Yosemite Sam looking dude comes out, I was just like, oh my God, I am so in, so in for this book. I must see how this turns out. I am so like excited for this.
Yeah.
Kofi, what did you think?
Yeah, this is the one where I was ready to turn on you really hard when I saw the cover of this. And like I said, I mean, there's this and then there's like, what's the other one? I'm looking at Monsters Are My Business. Like I kept seeing.
Oh, we'll get to that like, too.
Yeah, I was just like, Matt, what is wrong with you this week? We're doing comic books. Like, how are you in cartoon land? And so then this book started, and then I was just like, wait, what is this? And it's a mystery for most of the book, and they don't even tell you. I mean, it doesn't even get done in the mystery setup by the end of this first issue, I will say. But I was intrigued, and I was just like, what is happening? And by the end, I was like, this is the most Roger Rabbit-ass thing I have seen in a long time. And I am here for it. Like, this is really interesting. You want to talk about first issues? We always talk about first issues. This is one hell of a first issue right up there with The Last Mermaid of just putting you into a world that's obviously fully formed, has a long mythos to it already, but you're just coming in from the perspective of this one character at this one moment in this kind of pivotal moment. And I was just like, already I have so many questions and I'm so intrigued. And like you said, when the Yosemite Sam character comes in and there's just a line at the end, like, oh, this is real. This is all real. Like, you're just like, this is so weird and demented. Like, I am here for it. Like, I gotta see, because there's just like crazy little hints and you already get to know it's kind of almost like a reverse Roger Rabbit, but there are little hints dropped by like, because the main character kid who doesn't know like his special powers or what's going on with him. And you see these little hints throughout the book. And then when you realize by the end and you go back and reread it, like all the little hints, you're like, oh my God, this is crazy. I see what this is. And it's hilarious. Like the thing about the peppers and starting to fire.
Yes!
And you're like, because you read it the first time, you're like, what in the Superman is this? And you're like, what? And then you go back at the end, you're like, oh, like, yeah, this is so many tropes from our childhood. This requires you to have watched cartoons, played video games from that like 80s, 90s era. Like, if you know that, like, there's so many things in this book that will resonate with you. And just from like when the kid, I mean, the beginning scene of the kids in the bridge and what happens by the end there. And then when you go back, because at first you're like, wait, what? This is kind of dark. And then you go back and look and you're like, oh, that's hilarious. And so, like, I like everything this book is cooking with. And I was like, wow, Matt, you've redeemed yourself. And redeem this show between this book and the next book, so because I really thought you had lost your mind. I was like, what is this kid doing? Everything I look at. Plus, I read Uncanny X-Men 2, which we'll talk maybe on Friday's show about that. We gotta sit the congregation down and have a conversation about what's going on in Uncanny X-Men as well. But I read a lot of cartoons, comics this week.
You read a lot. Yeah. Okay, so I'm gonna end it because on the cartoon front, because number one, we got to wrap soon. But two, Monsters Are My Business is the one he was referred to. That was delightful. And I had no idea. All I saw was the cover, and I went, I'm gonna give it a shot because I'm just a sucker for visual looks like this. And I gotta say, Colin Bunn and Patrick Piazzalunga and Marco Bracco, what a like such a visual treat this book. It's like very much like leans hard into the over the top cartoony style. The action, it's essentially about like, you know, kind of a world disaster and opens a kind of a hell gate or whatever. There's still a lot of questions. Like I couldn't explain the whole plot to you if I tried, cause they haven't revealed all that stuff. Right. But essentially there's monsters and the world has kind of opened up and there's hunters now. And there's this one who's just this big dude that you see on the cover there, with a big axe. This is what he does. He lives in the bad area of town so he can help people and run monsters off. He has a koala named Cuddles who literally like destroys a monster from inside. It is the
like
best.
Indestructible. It's crazy. Like, yeah.
and they're nuts. Partnered with a necromancer. Come on.
Yeah. It's basically like it's a cartoony Lovecraftian, like HP Lovecraft world, as if something from an HP Lovecraft book if the world had fallen into one of those like dark Lovecraftian kind of fates where some other dimension, some other dark dimension opened into ours. You know, I think there's a beginning description of how the acid rain started and fell for like 40 days and created these massive acid lakes where these monsters were birthed and all this stuff. So it's a whole world setting. And it's like, yeah, this crazy hunter, his like indestructible koala who may be a demon of its own or a monster of its own and a necromancer, like hunting monsters as a business. And the opening scene of them just taking down this sphincter monster thing with like little like cheap ass Hickman charts of them because they don't have like computers. So they're just like scribbling on notepads. But it's basically, if you like that Dylan O'Brien movie, Love and Monsters, which is not a bad movie, you should go watch that. It's actually a pretty entertaining movie. But it's kind of like that, that vibe. It's kind of comedic. It's kind of funny. It's kind of horror. And like, yeah, there's already in, you know, Controller Zen in the comments saying like, yeah, this already feels like it could, both this and Uncanny Valley already feel like setups for what would be entertaining movies, animated or otherwise, like. Because, yeah, just this opening scene of them in the car and with, like, a chainsaw axe going after this sphincter tentacled monster. It's, I mean, just saying that out loud tells you what kind of vibe this book is on.
It's so, so fun. It's
yeah,
so
and it, it is a lot of fun. And the dialogue and the world is all there. And it's, like, and it's kind of a, like a raw, crazy world. And it's fun. But it's in this cool kind of animated style. So, yeah, this, we don't get many Lovecraftian stories kind of in that vibe crafted out like this. So this was another surprise that redeemed Matt.
All right, Kobe, I want you to take us through because you've been look doing the work and keeping up with this sprawling Fall of X saga. It feels like in like 9 books that it keeps taking place. What did you think? I know you wanted to save Ultimate X-Men for Maine.
Yeah. Okay, we'll talk about
that. So we'll save that for Maine. What did you think of the others?
Okay, so I think this week I've gotten to Resurrection of Magneto. I have not read Invincible Iron Man, but I read Resurrection of Magneto 4, which ends this limited series. And this is the book we really wanted, right? This is the issue. Magneto's alive again, and now it's just the final identity kind of question of who Magneto should be in this new world order. And it's an interesting thing of where he ends. And it's where you want him to be before we get into these new X-Men books. Because it's like Magneto, and it's kind of weirdly where X-Men 97 is. It's like Magneto trying to be good, but still remembering, like, he still is Magneto and will do the necessary. He'll cross that line. And there's a scene in this book that's pretty horrific about how Magneto has to save a bunch of people from an impossible trap, and how he chooses to do that is pretty, pretty gnarly. And you're like, oh, yeah. Ooh. This is Magneto. But it brings us a new Magneto. He's younger, and he's kind of back to a square one. That is interesting, where it's a composite of like all these Magnetos, and there's literally a visual of him taking on a battle where he has his purple helmet, white helmet, and black helmet, and he's still trying to decide like who I'm going to be. Yeah, so that's interesting. And I read the Wolverine Sabretooth War, which is just, I can't wait for that trade paperback. That's going to be one of the more entertaining like Wolverine stories of the past few years, and that's saying something because there've been some entertaining Wolverine stories, but yeah. Yeah, the Sabretooth War is still going strong, and I think that's about where I am in terms of like reading all these crazy comics this week.
I wonder if Sabretooth War is going to be like because of everything else that's going on with Fall of X and all that. I feel like it's just really under the radar, and it will probably end up being, you know, how we all look at Civil War and we look at like obviously the main series, but there's a couple other spinoff titles or tie-in titles that really like are integral to that story, and also just great. And you know, obviously the Amazing Spider-Man stuff that was going on there is a huge one. But like Wolverine and Damage Control, all that stuff that was in that series ended up being like some of the most important stuff to come out of that. And I feel like over time, it's just kind of its importance has grown. And with this Sabretooth War, I feel like once like Fall of X wraps and we're into the next era and stuff, and it does come out in trade, I feel like you'll get a lot more people kind of feeling like they missed it, you know, kind of like it just passed them by because there was just so much out there, and it will probably grow in appreciation over time. I think that's very much the case for that. Before we go, I want to do a shout out to Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, The Return. This is the Amy Jo Johnson and Matt Hodson series. This one, you know, I've been talking about taking big swings. This one very much makes some big reveals midway and towards the end that kind of reframe how the previous two issues have played out. And we're up on the finale. It's just a 4-issue mini, but we're up on the finale next time. And I'm really intrigued to see kind of where, how they pull all this together, where this leaves us as in terms of who's alive, who's dead, and kind of where we go from here. And then Green Lantern number 10, you can check out my full review on comicbook.com. But this very much, we've been, you know, Hal Jordan has kind of been this evolving person and human being over the course of the first 9 issues. And here it's like, all right, so now we've done all this work and investment, let's move him back to where all the other lanterns are and do this kind of big rebellion story. It's got a very like Star Wars vibes, honestly, of, you know, trying to kind of take down the Empire after it's assumed control and stuff. There's a lot of really fun stuff there. So recommend that as well. So that is us. Kofi, any things you want to shout out before we head out?
No, I think we've covered it all. I think there were some good debuts from kind of the secondary publishers this week, and everybody should definitely check those out and continue to check out comics of both the big publishers and everybody and everything in between.
Yeah, and of course you can check out, we have so much going on. You can check out all our analysis on Fallout. You can check that out today and this week. You can also check out our full reaction to the new Joker trailer. I am not going to say the full name because I will butcher it, but Joker 2. You can find our full reaction there as well. Obviously, we have the main show, Comic Book Nation, on Fridays. We have the pull list here. We have Anime Initiative, and that crew is just killing it right now. And then, of course, Quick Save, all about gaming. So make sure to check us back next week. Until then, deuces.
Peace.